Imagine a star, millions of times larger than our sun.
Right.
But instead of burning bright with nuclear fusion, this primordial giant is, well, it's completely dark. It basically feeds entirely on invisible dark matter just to keep from collapsing in on itself.
It's an incredible concept.
It really is. And then take that idea of invisible ancient leviathans and snap straight back to reality today, where an entirely different kind of invisible threat, a zero-click cyber weapon, is silently hijacking a diplomat's smartphone.
Yeah, without them ever even touching the screen.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So today's deep dive takes us on a rather jarring journey. We're jumping from the largest structures in the early cosmos straight down into, you know, microscopic memory corruption lurking right in your pocket.
It's quite a spectrum to cover in a single sitting, isn't it? We are unpacking a highly detailed intelligence dossier from Tech and Night. It's dated Saturday, August 29, 2026. And when you look at the sheer breadth of this evening briefing, you really start to see the connective tissue between advanced astrophysics, nation-state cyber espionage, and even the future of physical manufacturing.
Yeah, the Tekken editorial board actually awarded the specific evening briefing a 9.8 out of 10. They branded it a superb Saturday finale.
Which is high praise.
It really is. And having gone through the material myself, I completely understand the rating. Now, before we get into the mechanics of these six major breakthroughs, I strongly urge everyone listening to visit takinggame.com.
Absolutely.
We are going to break down the most vital takeaways here, but reading the primary sources and the full investigative dossiers for yourselves is an absolute must. You'll really want to see the original data.
Yeah, it's an incredibly dense read.
Mm-hmm.
Starting at the literal dawn of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
So the first breakthrough comes from a research team at Colgate University who have been analyzing anomalies in the cosmic gravitational wave background.
Or the GWB. Let's unpack the mechanics of that a bit because the methodology is just fascinating.
It is.
They combine space-based laser telemetry with something called nanograph pulsar timing arrays.
Right, which sounds complicated.
It does. But for anyone unfamiliar, think of a pulsar as a cosmic lighthouse. It's spinning rapidly in space, sending us a pulse of radiation with this perfect clock-like precision.
Mm.
If an invisible gravitational wave rolls through our galaxy, it subtly stretches and squashes the space between Earth and those lighthouses.
Meaning the pulses arrive just slightly out of sync.
Right.
And by measuring those microscopic delays across dozens of pulsars, astrophysicists can map these nanohertz frequency ripples rolling through the fabric of space-time.
Wow.
Yeah, and the Colgate team actually managed to trace a very specific set of these ultra-low sub-audible ripples straight back to the first 100 million years following the Big Bang.
Okay, let's unpack this. So it's sort of like hearing the low rumble of a distant ancient ocean, which is the gravitational wave background, and finally figuring out exactly what kind of invisible cosmic leviathans are making the waves.
That's a brilliant analogy, yeah. And those creatures are what the researchers are calling primordial dark stars.
But this completely upends how we're taught stars work, doesn't it? I mean, we're taught that a star is a massive ball of gas sustaining itself through nuclear fusion. The dossier says these dark stars didn't use fusion at all?
No, they couldn't have, not based on the timeline.
Right.
We are looking at an era before conventional stellar nurseries even existed.
Right.
So these theoretical first-generation behemoths were sustained in a state of hydrostatic equilibrium entirely by dark matter annihilation.
Okay.
They were powered by self-annihilating, weakly interacting massive particles.
WIMPs.
Exactly. Known as WIMPs.
I want to make sure I grasp the physics here. So gravity is trying to crush this massive cloud of gas inward, right? Without nuclear fusion pushing outward, the star should just collapse into a black hole. But instead, these WIMP particles are colliding inside the core, annihilating each other, and generating enough outward thermal pressure to hold the entire supermassive structure up.
That is the exact mechanism. Spot on.
Yeah.
And it fundamentally alters our timelines for early galactic nucleosynthesis.
Wow.
More importantly, it provides the first empirical window into the actual nature of dark matter particles. I mean, we've known dark matter exists because of its gravitational pull on galaxies.
Yeah.
But we've never observed its interaction. The directorate at Colgate actually referred to these gravitational waves as acoustic fossils of the cosmos.
Acoustic fossils. That is incredible.
We're detecting the ancient resonance of dark matter interacting with itself.
Acoustic fossils from billions of years ago. It's Just brilliant. Yet, while astrophysicists are detecting these invisible ripples from the dawn of time, state cybersecurity agencies are battling invisible threats lurking right in our pockets today.
It is a severe shift in scale. We are moving from deep space to the volatile memory chips inside mobile phones.
Yeah, a bit of a leap.
State cybersecurity defense agencies issued emergency warnings regarding an advanced nation-state cyber espionage campaign. It's targeting high-profile government officials and international infrastructure executives.
And the mechanism of this attack is what I find so unsettling. I mean, IT departments drill basic digital hygiene into us every day, right? Don't click on sketchy links. Don't download unverified attachments. But this campaign uses zero-click modal spyware.
Yeah.
It operates with zero user interaction. Here's where it gets really interesting. If this requires literally zero clicks to compromise a device, how on earth is an official supposed to protect themselves? Standard awareness training seems completely useless here.
It is entirely useless against this threat model. The forensic telemetry detailed in the dossier shows the intrusion chain exploits memory corruption vulnerabilities. And these are hidden deep within mobile packet processing daemons.
Okay, let's translate that for a moment. Think of a packet processing daemon like an automated mailroom clerk inside your phone.
Right.
Its job is to receive incoming data packets from the cellular network and sort them out before the phone's operating system even alerts you that you have a message.
Exactly.
The zero-click malware essentially hides a microscopic explosive inside one of these digital envelopes. The phone is compromised the millisecond. The internal clerk opens it long before your screen lights up or you click anything.
As a rather grim but highly accurate analogy, because the malformed packet causes a buffer overflow in that daemon, the attacker can silently inject malicious code directly into the device's volatile memory.
The RAM?
Yes, the RAM. And once it's embedded, it harvests GPS coordinates, activates ambient microphones, and most critically, it intercepts end-to-end encrypted messaging.
But wait, if the messages are end-to-end encrypted on apps like Signal or WhatsApp, how are they reading them? The briefing notes the malware intercepts the data prior to encryption.
Right, because it breaches the architecture at the deepest hardware layers.
Ah.
The malware sits in the volatile memory, observing the keystrokes or reading the unencrypted data as it sits in the RAM just microseconds before the encryption application locks it down.
Goodness me.
It bypasses the cryptographic vault entirely by stealing the assets while they are still in the hallway, so to speak. The National Incident Response Center calls this the apex of offensive cyber weapons.
So how does a diplomat protect their communications then?
Well, the Tekken Strategic Cyber Defense perspective outlines very specific hardware-focused hardening protocols.
Okay.
High-risk individuals are now required to enforce strict OS-level lockdown modes, which severely limit the types of network packets the device will even accept.
Right.
Furthermore, they mandate daily hardware reboots. Because this malware relies on volatile memory, which requires continuous electrical power to hold data cycling, the power completely clears the RAM and drops the implant.
Oh, that makes sense.
Finally, they are disabling legacy 2G radio connectivity. The outdated encryption standards on 2G cell towers are frequently manipulated to deliver these initial malformed packets.
It is a stark reminder that vulnerabilities hidden deep in hardware processing loops can completely undermine software encryption, which actually provides a perfect bridge to the third major finding in the dossier concerning cryptocurrency and the physical hardware devices we use to secure digital assets.
Yeah, we are looking at another vulnerability where the digital interface lies to the user, but this time it's targeting financial infrastructure.
Right.
One key security lab conducted a detailed vulnerability research disclosure on legacy versions of the Ledger Ethereum hardware wallet application. Specifically, we're talking about builds prior to version 1.22.2.
The technical mechanics of this exploit are fascinating. The researchers successfully reproduced a critical transaction replacement vulnerability. Under laboratory conditions, they demonstrated what happens if the host computer, the laptop you plug your hardware wallet into, is compromised by malware.
Exactly. Now, the attacker cannot extract the private cryptographic keys from the hardware device itself. Those remain locked down.
Okay, that's good.
However, the malware on the laptop can intercept and manipulate the transaction data being sent to the hardware device for signing. They demonstrated the ability to alter the gas fee parameters, the network computational costs, and the transaction destination data.
So what does this all mean for the user? Let's use an analogy here. It's basically like signing a physical paper contract, but the ink magically changes the recipient's bank account details after you've already verified it with your own eyes.
Exactly.
Or like looking at a digital menu at a restaurant. You click on a 5-pound burger, but because the wiring between your screen and the kitchen has been hijacked, the kitchen prints out an order for a 500-pound steak and charges your card.
Right. The screen lied to you.
Yeah. In this case, the user thinks they are approving a standard transfer based on what their laptop monitor displays, but the Ledger hardware device is actually signing a maliciously altered contract. And the crucial flaw in the legacy application was that these alterations did not reflect transparently on the physical hardware screen of the Ledger device itself.
Exactly. The user was flying blind. That blind signing vulnerability is the crux of the issue.
Yeah.
However, it's worth noting the ecosystem's responsible disclosure framework functioned exactly as intended here. France-based Ledger acknowledged OneKey's findings, completely eliminated the vulnerability in Ethereum app version 1.22.2.
With zero customer funds compromised in the wild, which is a massive relief.
Absolutely. The dossier also includes a very detailed hardware wallet cryptographic security comparison matrix here for 2026.
I saw that, yeah.
It draws a sharp contrast between hardware architectures. It compares the highly transparent, fully audited open dual secure element used by OneKey, which holds an EAL 6 plus security rating, against a closed source proprietary ST33 chip utilized by Ledger.
Right.
The underlying takeaway from the tech and analysts is that regardless of your preferred chip architecture, rapid response patching is the ultimate safety net.
Yeah.
Securing digital assets requires constant vigilance from both researchers and consumers.
Securing digital value is foundational, obviously, but it becomes exponentially more critical when you consider the sheer scale of the digital worlds being built right now. Which brings us to the fourth story in the dossier.
Moving from protecting digital assets to generating entirely new digital realities using artificial intelligence.
Right. Roblox made some watershed announcements at their annual developer conference, specifically regarding the integration of generative AI creation tools directly into Roblox Studio.
This isn't just about generating a 2D image or a texture file either. The new suite allows for instant text-to-world procedural synthesis.
Wow.
A creator can type a natural language prompt, and the AI will generate complex 3D environments, physics-enabled structures, and even write the operational Lua code routines required to make the world interactive.
That's insane. So you could theoretically type, create a bustling medieval marketplace where the non-player characters barter with players, and the engine synthesizes the environment, the character models, and the behavioral logic simultaneously.
Yes, simultaneously. It drastically lowers the technical barrier to entry. David Dazuki, the CEO of Roblox, noted their vision is to empower any creator on Earth to transform an imaginative concept into a live multiplayer 3D simulation in minutes.
Without needing a formal background in computer science.
Exactly, or software engineering.
Well, I understand the appeal of democratizing 3D game design, but I have serious reservations about the other half of this announcement. To unlock mature narrative themes and access expanded monetization tools, Roblox deployed an enhanced age-gated account framework for creators age 17 and above.
Right.
The requirement. Biometric facial scanning. As the Tekken editorial board noted in their cons list for the evening, requiring biometric scanning just to design a mature game level sounds like a fairly heavy privacy trade-off.
The privacy concerns are entirely valid, and they're being heavily debated. However, we do have to look at the mechanics of platform scale.
Okay, how so?
Well, when you deploy generative AI tools capable of instantly synthesizing highly complex, potentially photorealistic and mature content, manual human moderation becomes mathematically impossible.
Ah, I see. There's just too much of it being made too fast.
Exactly. The platform requires an ironclad cryptographic partition to ensure that these mature instances where elevated creative freedom exists cannot bleed into the wider ecosystem populated by millions of younger users.
Right.
So the biometric verification is designed as a definitive, unspoofable wall to protect the younger audience whilst lowering the technical barriers for older developers.
It's a fascinating tension. They are using AI to completely tear down the barriers to digital creation while simultaneously using biometric surveillance to heavily police the gates of those creations.
The irony is quite profound. Millions of users are leveraging AI to build infinite, boundless digital environments in the cloud. Yet when we examine the fifth segment of the dossier, we see the biggest tech conglomerates doing the exact opposite.
Yeah, this is brilliant. They are desperately trying to pull AI out of the cloud and force it into physical reality.
Exactly.
This might be the most macroeconomically significant item in the entire August 29th briefing. The intelligence suggests a massive reallocation of capital expenditure across hyperscalers like Microsoft, Amazon, and Meta.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, so they are literally taking tens of billions of dollars previously used for white-collar office overhead and pouring them directly into physical humanoid AI robotics.
Yes.
That is a massive paradigm shift. Are we talking about a complete reimagining of the global workforce here?
We really are. Industry strategists have formally designated 2026 as the historic inflection point for this transition. The era of hyperscaling software as a service or SaaS products has reached a saturation point.
Right. Everyone has enough software now.
Exactly. The next frontier for capital growth requires solving physical problems in the real world.
But why humanoid robotics? I mean, if you want to automate a factory floor, why not just build a bespoke mechanical arm on a track like we've done for decades? Why the pivot to embodied decision intelligence inside a humanoid chassis?
Because bespoke machinery only works in a highly controlled, predictable environment. Mm. And the real world is chaotic.
Right. Things go wrong.
Exactly. It involves dropped objects, fluctuating friction, changing layouts, and, you know, unpredictable human interactions. A digital AI failing inside a virtual simulation has zero consequences.
Just reset it.
Right. But an AI operating heavy machinery on a factory floor requires physical agency. It requires reinforcement learning based on actual gravity and tactile feedback.
Wow.
By putting the AI inside a humanoid chassis, it can utilize the existing infrastructure built for humans, stairs, handles, tools, without requiring the company to rebuild the entire factory around a proprietary robotic track system.
That makes total sense. Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft, is actually quoted in the dossier saying, "Artificial intelligence will not remain confined to chat windows and digital monitors. The next frontier is physical agency within real-world manufacturing and logistics ecosystems."
It is a massive paradigm shift away from the screen and back into heavy industry.
And revolutionizing physical logistics isn't solely the domain of humanoid factory robots, is it? It's also hitting the streets to completely overhaul how things physically move through our cities. Which brings us to the final breakthrough detailed in the evening briefing.
Yeah, segment 6 focuses on practical, sustainable urban mobility. A Belgian clean mobility startup named Eni has officially unveiled their flagship vehicle. It's the LUV1 modular cargo electric motorcycle.
The engineering on this chassis is a remarkable feat of logistics hardware. It is specifically designed to redefine how commercial goods and daily commuters move through heavily congested city centers.
And the specifications detailed in the dossier are just staggering. The LUV1 features a reinforced modular chassis that delivers 120 liters of integrated cargo volume.
120 liters of cargo on a two-wheeler. That is brilliant. It is essentially like strapping a massive utility van's worth of crucial hauling space onto a nimble chassis, completely bypassing city gridlock.
Exactly. And the primary engineering challenge was achieving that volume without compromising handling stability.
Right. You don't want it tipping over.
Precisely. So by dropping the center of gravity within the modular frame, they maintain rider safety, even under maximum payload. But, you know, the cargo space is only part of the solution. Continuous operational uptime is the real metric for logistics fleets.
Right, because if a delivery vehicle is tethered to a fixed charging station for 3 hours in the middle of a shift, the fleet loses money.
Exactly why the LUV1 incorporates a 30-second hot-swappable battery system. It utilizes a dual-pack configuration, meaning the rider can swap out depleted cells for fully charged ones in half a minute and immediately return to the route.
That's so fast.
Yeah, and even under heavy load. The vehicle delivers a combined urban range exceeding 140 kilometers on a single charge.
It is the ultimate synthesis of hardware innovation and environmental necessity. It resolves a congestion crisis by combining the heavy hauling capacity of a van with the agility and zero emission efficiency of an electric two-wheeler. A hyper-practical application of technology to fix a glaring physical problem in cities like London or Brussels.
It provides a perfectly grounded conclusion to the intelligence dossier, too. I mean, we began with the abstract theoretical origins of the universe, and we conclude with a highly tangible zero-emission solution for last-mile urban logistics.
It really highlights the immense value of the Take a Night dossier from August 29th, 2026. Looking back over the breadth of these 6 items, that 9.8 superb Saturday finale rating from the Taken editorial board feels completely justified.
Oh, without a doubt.
We've explored the acoustic fossils of primordial dark stars, the mechanics of zero-click memory corruption targeting diplomats, crucial blind-signing vulnerability audits by OneKey, the democratization of 3D virtual worlds via Roblox AI, the multi-billion-dollar pivot towards embodied humanoid robotics, and modular electric logistics hardware.
It is a phenomenal cross-section of human ingenuity, really capturing the sheer complexity of our interconnected technological landscape in 2026.
I want to deliver one final strong invitation to everyone listening. Please visit tekengame.com.
Yes, absolutely.
We have only scratched the surface of this Saturday evening executive summary today. Their site contains incredibly deep investigative dossiers that we simply didn't have the time to cover, whether it is their analysis of the Google Gemini Omni 1.1 architecture or the detailed breakdown of the FBI and NSA taking down Chinese cyber networks and IoT botnets. The primary source material is essential reading.
Anyone attempting to navigate this shifting landscape needs to be engaged with the original intelligence.
Absolutely. We started this deep dive talking about the massive leap from invisible cosmic leviathans to invisible cyber threats. But looking at the trajectory of AI from generating digital Roblox worlds to piloting physical humanoid robots, it leaves me with a rather unsettling thought.
Ooh, what's that?
Well, it raises a profound question about the convergence of these technologies. If AI is moving from generating digital worlds to piloting physical humanoid robots and optimizing urban logistics networks, what happens when these autonomous embodied systems begin writing their own zero-click communication protocols to coordinate with each other in the physical world, entirely bypassing human oversight?
Goodness me. Now that is a mechanical nightmare to keep you up at night.
It really is. Until next time, keep digging into the sources.